Well, it's opening night at the Vulcan Theatre now on 7. Dubious behaviour from the thespian types means that Inspector Allen is about to become a very busy detective.
But don't you realise? His death has set us free. No more hiding, no more lies.
And what will you do with your freedom? Will you stay, or will you go back?
Back to the island. Back to my refuge from the world. Oh no, that's no longer an option. I'm going to stay.
It won't be easy.
Life isn't meant to be easy, my dear. But it is meant to be lived. Come.
Everybody on?
Are we all here?
No, where's Ben?
Mr. Bennington! Mr. Bennington!
Well, we can't wait for Ben. Take it up, Clem. Where the hell's Ben got to?
What's the better he comes on for a star call?
He's locked himself in!
He probably passed out. Had a couple more drinks since he came off.
I've got a spare key.
Take it up, Clem.
On you go, Dr. Rutherford.
Thank you all. I'm much obliged to you, ladies and gentlemen, and to our actors. The actors are much obliged too, no doubt to you, but not necessarily to me. I
gas.
Am not able to gather...
There's a smell of gas.
You're right. Tell Clem to get the curtain down as soon as he can, without creating a panic.
Wine needs no bushel, therefore to beg will not become me. What the devil do you think you're playing at? I have nearly finished.
It's Ben. He's gassed himself. Looks as if he's dead.
We present Jeremy Clyde as Chief Detective Inspector Allen in Opening Night by Niall Marsh.
Gassed himself in his dressing room. Something about that rings a bell. Does it with you, Mr. Allen?
A positive peal of them, Brer Fox. The Jupiter Theatre murder 5 years ago.
Oh, yes. Homicide dressed up to look like suicide, wasn't it? Were you on the case, sir?
I certainly was. There was a gas fire in the dressing room and another one in the room next door, back to back with it. The job was done by blowing down the tube of the gas fire next door. Now, this put the fire out in the dressing room, but left the gas on. Now, the victim was in a drunken stupor, and then the trick worked. We only got the murderer because of traces of crepe hair and grease paint left on the tube.
So what became of the theatre? There's no work called the Jupiter now.
Oh, that's just the point. It's the same place. It was shut up for 2 or 3 years at least, and then Adam Poole took it over, got a permit to renovate it, and named it the Vulcan. I imagine this is only his second production there.
And now the same thing's happened all over again.
It looks very like it, Brer Fox. And actors are a pretty superstitious bunch at the best of times. God knows what kind of a state they'll be in by the time we get there.
This theatre, this awful theatre.
I know, Helena, darling. It's as though there's some sort of jinx on the place.
Ben was haunted by it, I'm sure of it, J.G.
All right, Helena. Perhaps what happened here 5 years ago did give Ben the idea of gassing himself, but he would have found the means in any case.
Why? Why did he do it, Adam?
He was in a bad way, Ella. He'd gone completely to pieces and he knew it.
He was certainly in the mood to do something desperate.
And I wasn't much help, was I, Parry? Though I did my best to be a good wife to him for as long as I could.
I knew just as soon as I smelt the gas. There's a thing in this theatre. I just sat there and I knew. Oh, I do feel sick.
Okay, for pity's sake, what are you talking about?
It was fate, Parry. I just felt it.
You mustn't let yourself get obsessed by this thing, Gay.
I wasn't a bit surprised, J.G. I just knew something had to happen tonight.
Do you mean to say that you sat here by yourself in the green room waiting for fate to strike?
Isn't it amazing? I'm so terribly sorry, darling Helena. But we're together in this, aren't we? He was my uncle and your husband.
The police are here. They're in Ben's dressing room with Dr. Rutherford.
Do you think they'll want to keep us here long, Clem?
The inspector, Inspector Allen, asked me to say that if the whole thing's straightforward, it shouldn't be too bad.
What do you mean, straightforward?
I imagine he means if they're satisfied that it was suicide.
But they can't think that anyone murdered Ben, surely.
Murder? That's what it was last time. Murder made to look like suicide. And now it's happened again. And this time it's Uncle Ben!
Filthy smell, gas. Always hangs about in cases like this. He looks pretty ghastly in that makeup.
But here, chap, the makeup was required for my play. It should, in fact, be a damn sight more repellent.
Why is he so thickly powdered?
He needed it. He sweated like a pig. Alcohol and a dicky heart.
Did you look after him, Dr. Rutherford?
No, I don't practice nowadays. I gave it up when the writing business began to pay off. I don't know who his medical man was. His wife can tell you that.
Helena Hamilton.
Yes, poor woman.
But there's a mark under the jaw. Makeup is thinner there. Is it a bruise?
Well, looks as if someone threw a punch at him. Well, we can get a better idea when they've cleaned him up a bit.
Now, who found him?
Jacko, I believe.
Jacko?
Jacques Doré. He's French-Canadian. Adam's assistant, among other things. You'll find him in the night watchman's kitchen.
Well, thank you for all your help, Dr. Rutherford. I'd be grateful if you could hang on with the others in the green room for a while, until the situation becomes a little clearer.
Of course, of course. I shall curl up in an armchair and hand myself over to Care Charmer's sleep. Wake me up if you require my services.
You are Mr. Poole's assistant, I believe, Monsieur Doré.
That is something of an understatement, Inspector. Let us rather say dog's body in ordinary to the Vulcan Theater. Set designer, costume designer, Johannes Factotum. Not without bells on. At the moment, I'm boiling up cans of soup for the company. Another of my little talents.
I gather it was you who found the body.
I unlocked the door. The call boy had been hammering away at it unavailingly for a long time.
And can you describe to me what you found?
Clark Bennington was lying near the gas fire. I could only see his legs and the lower part of his body. The rest of him was hidden by his coat, which was pulled up over the fire, and his head and shoulders. It looked rather like a tent. I could hear the hiss of the gas fire going on underneath. The lead to the fire had been pulled away and was in his mouth. I turned off the gas. So you will doubtless find my fingerprints, Inspector.
Plain sailing, wouldn't you say, Mr. Allen?
On the face of it.
Probably the past history of the place, the previous suicide, preyed on Bennington's mind and led him to do away with himself in the same fashion.
He must have also entertained the very nasty notion of throwing suspicion of foul play on his fellow actors. Mm. If there's a gas fire in the dressing room back to back with this one...
Which there is.
The devil there is. So what does this Bennington chap do? He recreates as far as possible the whole setup, leaves no note, no indication of his intention to gas himself... Who's next door?
Mr. Parry Percival, the juvenile lead, though I gather he's not so juvenile as he used to be.
So Bennington does himself in, leaving our aging juvenile ostensibly in the position of the Jupiter murderer. It's a rotten sort of suicide, wouldn't you say, Br'er Fox?
We don't know anything for certain yet, of course. Do you want to read Sergeant Gibson's inventory?
If the sergeant's been his usual meticulous self, perhaps you could skip some of the more dispensable points of detail.
One cardboard box containing false hair, substance labelled nose paste, one unopened tin of face powder, 6 sticks of grease paint.
No powder pad?
Powder pad.
For him to powder his face with?
It's not in the inventory. A cigarette case with 3 cigarettes and 1 packet of 50, used tumbler smelling of brandy, and flask 1/6 full of brandy concealed behind mirror.
Fairly ineffectual hiding place. Anything else?
Considerable quantity of powder spilt on shelf and on adjacent floor area.
Well, that's certainly true. Somebody must have knocked down a box of powder. It's gone over everything. Could you check with Mr. Doré whether this happened after he found the body?
Yes, sir. Some paper ash on the floor, original form indistinguishable, and signs of something having been burnt in the hearth.
What was in his clothes?
Bills, old racing card, checkbook. That's about it.
Right. I wish I could say I believed in all this, Br'er Fox, but I can't. There's something wrong, but I can't put my finger on it. Have you got a list of the company?
Yes, Mr. Allen, I've got it here.
Who have we got, exactly?
We have Adam Poole himself, popularly known as the Governor.
Shades of Henry Irving. Yes?
Helena Hamilton, the leading lady and wife of the dead man. Mm-hmm. Gay Gainsford, who is Bennington's niece, I believe. J.G. Darcy, whom I think we might describe as the character man, and Parry Percival, the aforementioned juvenile. Oh, and there's a girl called Martin Tarn, an understudy who went on for Miss Gainsford this evening.
Why was that?
Some kind of hysterical breakdown, I understand. Miss Tarn comes from New Zealand and has only been with the company for 3 days.
Oh, is that so? Well, when we come to question everyone individually, perhaps we should start with Miss Tarn, so that we can see the whole setup through a fresh pair of eyes. Oh, I suppose we'd better go and have a word with the cast. We can't put off the dread moment any longer. It's going to be damn bad publicity.
Heavens above. The publicity. None of us thought of that.
Did we not?
I must say, I would like to know what's going to happen. Do we carry on with the run of the play or what?
Yes, we go on. Isn't that so, Adam?
Ella, I've got to think. There are so
we
many.
Go on. We must go on.
Does that mean I take over from Ben? I was his understudy, after all.
I can't bear it. I think you're all awful. To sit round and talk about the show as if nothing had happened, when beyond those doors he's lying there dead and forgotten. It's the most brutal thing I've ever heard of, and if you think I'm ever coming near this horrible, fated, haunted place again, I'm telling you now that wild horses wouldn't drag me back.
Child, you're overwrought. You don't know what you're saying.
You'd got rid of me anyway.
Oh, darling, we've done no such thing.
Just because I would on Peter Nightgay doesn't mean...
Oh, doesn't it? You angled for this wretched part, Martin Tarn, and now you've got it. I think it's extremely likely you're responsible for what's happened.
Stop that at once, Gay. Stop it.
I won't. I won't be gagged. It drove my Uncle Ben to despair, and I don't care who knows it.
Gay, darling.
Chief Inspector Allen.
I'm afraid the first thing I have to say to you won't be very pleasant news. We don't look as if we're going to get through our side of this unhappy business as quickly as I'd hoped. I know you're all desperately tired and very shocked, and I'm sorry, but the general circumstances aren't quite as straightforward as you probably suppose them to be.
What exactly do you mean, Inspector?
Miss Hamilton, I believe.
Perhaps at this moment it would be better to call myself by my married name, Helena Bennington.
Yes, of course. I'm sorry, but I'm sure you will have guessed that one can't overlook the other case of gas poisoning associated with this theatre.
Yes, of course. We've all been talking about it.
I'm sure you have, and so have we. And I expect you've wondered if the memory of that former case could have influenced your husband.
I'm certain it did. We all are.
Have you any specific argument to support this theory?
Nothing specific, no. But I know that my husband didn't like this theatre on account of that other dreadful business. He felt that there was an unpleasant atmosphere in this place. In a way, I think it had a rather horrible fascination for him.
Did anyone else notice this fascination of Mr. Bennington's?
Oh, yes. Oh. I did. He talked to me about it. But when he saw how much it upset me, because I'm so stupidly sensitive to atmosphere, I just can't help it.
You are Mr. Bennington's niece, I believe, Miss Gainsford.
Yes. It was a rather marvellous relationship. My father died in the war, and Uncle Ben really felt we were awfully near to each other. Do you know, that's why it's so devastating for me, because I sensed how wretchedly unhappy he was.
Do you mind telling us why you thought him so unhappy?
I don't think any of us have any doubt about my husband's unhappiness, Mr. Allen. Ben drank so heavily that he had ruined his health and his work quite completely. I wasn't able to help him, and we were not... Our life together wasn't true. Tonight, he behaved very badly on the stage. He coloured his part at the expense of the other actors, and I think he was horrified by what he had done. I feel he suddenly looked at himself and couldn't face what he saw.
It would help me very much if any of the rest of you could tell me any happenings or remarks that might indicate that he had this thing in mind.
I think, perhaps...
Forgive me, but I don't yet know all your names.
I expect she's hoping to see hers in lights, aren't you, darling?
This is Miss Martin Tarn. She is, or should be, our heroine tonight. Miss Gainsford was taken ill, and Miss Tarn, who was the understudy, took her part at half an hour's notice. We'd all be extremely proud of her, if we had the wits to be anything but worried and exhausted.
And what have you remembered, Miss Tarn, that you think might help us?
It was something he said when he came off in the last act.
For his final exit in the play?
Yes. He spoke very disjointedly, but I do remember one thing quite distinctly, because it puzzled me very much. He said, "I just wanted to tell you that you needn't suppose what I'm going to do," and then he broke off.
Thank you, Miss Tarn. I begin to get the idea that none of you was very surprised by this event. Is that so?
Oh, I don't know that I... Let it pass.
Pipe up, Narcissus. The inspector won't bite.
Oh, shut up. You're all being so bloody frank and sensible about the suicide. You're so keen to show everyone how honest you are.
I am myself indifferent honest. How have we offended you, young Ganymede?
I know what you think of me, Doctor. And it doesn't say much for your talents as a diagnostician. But if it's queer to feel desperately sorry for a man who was miserable enough to shove a gas jet down his throat, if it's queer to be mentally and physically sick at the thought of it, then by God, I'd rather be queer than normal.
If you're the normal man you'd have us all believe, why the hell didn't you show like one?
Here, ladies and gents, is an alleged actor who an hour or two since was made a public and egregious figure of fun by the deceased before an audience of whinnying nincompoops, who before his final and most welcome exit suffered himself to be tripped up contemptuously by the deceased and who fell on his painted face.
That's quite enough of that, Rutherford.
Ladies and gents.
You're supposed to be in charge here, Inspector.
Yes, Alan, I really do think this is all getting fantastically out of hand. If we're all satisfied that this case of suicide...
Which we are not.
What?
We've reached a point where it's my duty to tell you that I'm by no means satisfied that there is, in fact, a case for suicide.
Is it not strange how loath one is to pronounce the word that is in all our minds? Murder. So beastly, isn't it?
Is there somewhere I can use as an office, Mr. Poole, where I can talk to each of you independently?
Yes, of course. Use mine. It's on the other side of the stage.
Well, thank you, Mr. Poole. If I may, I would like to have a word first with Miss Tarn.
May I ask a question?
As many as you like, Miss Tarn.
Why me? Why do you want to speak to me first?
You're not my prime suspect, Miss Tarn.
Oh.
It's simply because you've only been working at the Vulcan Theatre for 3 days that I want you to give me your first impressions of the company. I gather you've recently arrived from New Zealand?
Just over a fortnight ago. I can hardly believe it. You see, my money was stolen on the ship, and I had to get some kind of job rather quickly.
As an actress?
Well, yes. I'd had a bit of experience in New Zealand, and I didn't think it would be all that difficult. Well, I left my name with all the agencies. I went to every audition that was going, but no one wanted to know. After 2 weeks of dragging around London without any luck, I was exhausted and starving and pretty well beginning to give up hope. And then, one evening, I just happened to find myself outside this place.
The Vulcan Theatre?
Yes. I wandered inside without really thinking, and I heard Clem, the stage manager, phoning someone about a replacement for Miss Hamilton's dresser, who'd been rushed to hospital for an appendix operation.
Yes, what is it?
I believe you're looking for a dresser.
Are you from Mrs. Greenacres?
I understood you required a dresser, and I will be pleased to apply.
It's for Miss Helena Hamilton. We open on Thursday, 2 quick changes and so on. You've got references?
I haven't actually brought any.
Look, there isn't time. Can you start straight away?
It really was the most astonishing piece of good fortune.
It certainly was. The only drawback was that I had no money, so the night watchman let me spend the night in the theatre, sleeping in...
What's the matter, Miss Tarn?
Oh, I shouldn't have told you that. I don't want him to get into trouble.
It's hardly a matter for Scotland Yard. But go on with your story.
I was terrified of meeting Miss Hamilton at first. I thought she'd see through me straight away. But she couldn't have been friendlier.
You've come to help me, haven't you? Now that is kind. I'm sure we'll get on famously together.
And she turned her back on me. It took me a moment or two to realise that this was my cue to take off her coat. And then Mr. Bennington came in. It never occurred to me that he was her husband.
I've been having a word with Rutherford.
Oh, really? What about?
About young Gay. He's been going on at her again. So has Adam. I wanted to talk to you.
Well, so you shall. But I shall have to change now, Ben. This is my new dresser, Martin Tarn.
You see, I thought she must be married to Adam Poole.
What made you think that?
Well, they seemed so loving towards one another. And then a beautiful box of orchids arrived from him, and that seemed to clinch it.
Darling!
Ella! Hello!
He had the next-door dressing room, and they called to one another through the wall.
Darling, they're quite perfect. Thank you, my sweet. Oh, hello, Gay. Everything under control?
I suppose so. I'm trying to be good and sort of biddable, but underneath it all, I'm simply trembling with fright.
Now listen, Gay. You're going to make a great personal success of this part. It's a marvellous chance for you.
So everyone keeps on telling me. But Dr. Rutherford obviously thinks I shouldn't be playing it at all. He says I'm a misfit.
Oh, that's nonsense, Gay. He may seem hard at times.
Seem?
Well, he may be hard then. He's famous for it. But he's written a marvellous play. I'll have a word with him.
Can I tell him that?
Yes, Gay, you may tell him.
Oh, you're so miraculously kind, Auntie Ella. Oh, do forgive me. Helena, darling, thank you.
And she was off. I don't know whether she even noticed me. But I just happened to catch sight of Miss Hamilton's face in the mirror. She was looking at me very intensely. And at that moment, Dr. Rutherford came in.
Odd's teeth, what have we here?
My new dresser. Martin? Dr. Rutherford.
Stay me with flagons.
That fool of a wench Gainsford said you wanted to have a word with me.
Yes, I did. What on earth have you been saying to that poor child?
Nothing at all. I merely asked if, for the sake of my sanity, she'd be good enough to play the central scene without a goddamn simper all over her face.
You frightened her.
She terrifies me. I wrote this part for an intelligent actress who could be made to look like Adam. What do you give me? A moronic amateur who looks like nothing on God's earth? If I had my way, I'd have kicked her out long ago. Even now, it's not
John,
too late.
John, we open in 2 days.
An actress worth her salt could memorize the part in an hour. And I may as well tell you, I don't like the way that Ben is shaping up in the big scene. If Adam doesn't watch him, he'll be up to some bloody leading man hocus-pocus.
John, he won't. I'm sure he won't.
No, you're not. And as for that discard from the waxworks, Mr. Parry Percival, have I not stipulated from the beginning that I will not have any of those queer abortions in my works?
Parry isn't queer.
Oh, yes, he is. I have an instinct for these things, my girl.
I give up.
You don't do anything of the sort, my sweetie pie. You're going to be a sensation in the part I've written for you. Mm-hmm. Just think of that and leave all the rest to me.
For God's sake, don't quote from Macbeth. If Gay Gainsford heard you doing that, you really would go off the deep end.
Which is precisely where I'd like to push
her. Oh, go away. You're a wonderful playwright, but you're quite hopeless.
The audience is concluded?
It certainly is. And close the door after you. Oh. I need a cigarette. Martin, run round to my husband.
Right. He's got my cigarette case.
And of course, like a fool, I went straight to Mr. Poole's dressing room.
Helena's cigarette case? No, I haven't got it. Ella?
Yes, darling?
I haven't got your cigarette case.
No, Ben's got it. I said my husband, Martin, Mr. Bennington.
So I went along to Mr. Bennington's dressing room.
On the opposite side of the passage?
Yes. He had a glass of brandy in his hand, and he was talking to Mr. Darcy.
It's not my place to interfere, old boy, but I do feel for the poor child damnably, you know. Rutherford never loses an opportunity to take it out on Gay.
I couldn't agree more, and I'm damned angry about it. Yes, my dear. What can I do for you? This is my wife's new dresser, J.G.
Really? Good morning, child. I'll see you in a while, Ben.
And what can I do for the new dresser?
Miss Hamilton sent me to ask if you could let her have a cigarette case.
Have I got it? Try my overcoat, my dear, behind the door. This your first job as a dresser?
I've worked in the theatre before.
And where was that?
In New Zealand.
Really? In New Zealand?
I'm afraid the case isn't here.
God, what a bore. Pass me my jacket, will you?
He rummaged about a bit, and eventually he found it. And then he gave me a long, hard look. The kind I'd had from Mr. Darcy and Miss Hamilton.
New Zealand, eh?
He saw the resemblance between you and Adam Poole.
Yes. Oh, I was coming to that.
Take your time, Miss Tarr. What happened next?
There was a photo call on stage with everyone in full costume.
Darling, it's not going to be a flash, is it? With all of you looking like village idiots and me like the third witch on the morning after the cauldron scene.
Not if you can hold the pose for 3 seconds, Emma.
It all went pretty smoothly until it came to the photograph of Gay Gainsford scene with Mr. Poole. He wanted her to run the lines, and I could see that she was terribly nervous.
It's not enough for you to look like me, Gay. You've got to be me. You're supposed to be my heredity, confronting me like a threat. So, now, let's take it with the line. You've got your head in your arms. You raise your face slowly to look at me.
Don't you like what you see?
Yes. With a little gesture, remember?
Don't you like what you see?
I has leave the town criers spoke my life.
Oh, do shut up, Rutherford.
Oh, it offends my soul to hear my passion torn to tatters.
And of course, poor Miss Gainsford burst into tears. After it was all over, the man they called Jacko came up to me.
No one makes any introductions in this theatre, so we introduce ourselves to each other. I am Jacques Doré.
Right.
And you are the little chick whom the stork has brought too late, or dropped into the wrong nest. It is a pity you are a little dresser and not a little actress.
Before the first dress rehearsal that night, he insisted on taking me out for a meal. I think he was rather sorry for me. I wanted to talk to him about the play, but he was rather nervous about it. I don't know why.
It is a modern morality play. A new play with a very old theme.
And do you think it's any good?
Oh, sure, it's a good play. Rather in the continental manner of Sartre and Ennui. It is about a man confronted by his own heredity. And it is essential the secondary part actress should resemble the leading man. From hundreds of anxious ingenues, we select the one who is least unlike Adam, but still very unlike. And though I am a genius with makeup, there is very little I can do about it. So we depend entirely on the acting, on the way the girl will reflect Adam's way of speaking and his mannerisms. But this Miss Gainsford cannot do, because she is an actress of very little talent. Upon this scene, there enters, in the form of a dresser.
What are you trying to say?
If I sat down to draw the daughter or younger sister of our leading man, you are what I would draw. And so, of course, the theater is full of rumors and suppositions about a child born the wrong side of the blanket.
But he knows nothing about me. I've never seen him before, except in films in New Zealand.
And tell me, was it to get a job as a dresser that you came all the way from New Zealand?
For any job. All right, I wanted to work as an actress, but if you think I'm secretly hoping that Miss Gainsford will get laryngitis or break a leg, you couldn't be more mistaken.
Not even a little touch of laryngitis? I think you are either a little hypocrite or perhaps you are not a very good actress.
After the dress rehearsal had got going, I managed to watch some of it from the wings, and I realized the truth of what Jacko had said.
Miss Gainsford was not good?
It was not that so much. There were gestures of Adam Poole's that she was supposed to mimic, and lines she was expected to echo. But she just couldn't do it, and the harder she tried, the worse it got.
But it's you! Don't you see? You can't escape from it!
What I didn't realize was that Mr. Bennington was standing beside me. He smelled terribly of brandy.
So you think you could do better?
Oh, I'm sorry. Miss Hamilton want me to change over the third act.
No, I want you to tell me what this is all about and who the bloody hell you are.
You know who I am. Please let me go.
My wife's dresser and my wife's lover's little byblow. Is that the story? Tell me.
Off you go, Miss Tarn. Miss Hamilton will be waiting. You're an offensive fellow in your cups, Ben. Get along and change to the last act.
The rehearsal didn't end until well after midnight. I still hadn't been paid anything and I had nowhere to go.
So you decided to spend another night in the theatre?
I went into Miss Hamilton's dressing room to wait until everyone else had gone home. But I found Mr. Poole in there, sitting in front of the gas fire.
Come in, Miss Tarn. I want to talk to you. Do sit down, please.
Thank you.
I want to apologise to you for Mr. Bennington's behaviour. He's not likely to do so for himself.
That really didn't matter.
Well, of course it mattered. For both of us. You're a New Zealander, I understand. How old are you?
I'm 19.
I toured New Zealand in my first job 20 years ago, and Bennington was in the company. Hence his charming little line about my byblow. Under the circumstances, I hope you won't mind my asking you who your parents are.
My father was Edward Tarn. He was killed in the war in Crete.
And your mother? What was her maiden name?
She always thought it sounded silly. Paula Poole Passington.
Of course, that's it. An old cousin of my father's. His name was Poole. Married someone called Passington and went off to New Zealand. Did you know of the connection?
Yes, I did.
You might have mentioned it.
I preferred not to.
Too proud?
If you like.
And did you know about the girl's part in this play?
When I was at one of the agencies, someone told me they'd been looking for a girl who looked like you. But by then the part had been cast. I didn't want to come here, but when I discovered there was a vacancy as a dresser...
The question is, what are we going to do about it now? Let's go down to the stage, shall we? Jacko's waiting for us.
You saw the scene from the wings this evening. It's quite simple. All you are required to do is to sit at the desk. Adam will come in and he will run his hand through his hair, and you will make the same gesture. Then you will say, "Don't you like what you see?" Is that understood?
Yes, I think so.
Then let's try it. Sit down at the desk.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't realize you were in here. I just wanted to...
Don't you like what you see?
Can you do that again?
I don't know. I suppose so. Do you want me to try?
I don't think so. You did that very well. You can understudy the part from here on. And now Jacko will take you home to his house, where there's a small flat in the attic. You need have no fears. You'll be perfectly safe.
You are not my type, Miss Tarn. I prefer my ladies more mature. More mundane.
One other thing. Take this. It's the part. 13 pages of it. By tomorrow, you will be word perfect.
And were you?
Pretty well, bar one or two fluffs. Although I wasn't so sure when the stage manager took me through the moves. I was going over them by myself in the wardrobe room when I realized that Miss Gainsford was watching me.
I suppose you know what you're doing to me.
All I know is that I'm going to be your understudy. I'm damn grateful, but it's just any old understudy.
I think it's pretty cool to talk about any old understudy when you're the spitting image of Adam Poole.
Oh.
I've had to have an urchin cut and dye my hair, and all I get is everybody screaming insults at me. I loathe the play and everything to do with it. Why couldn't Uncle Ben leave me where I was, playing in weekly rep? But he made me go on with it. I hate him. I was miserable enough, God knows, but now I just don't know what to do with myself. If you have any pity for me at all, you'll go and tell Adam Poole you can't do it.
But you didn't give in to her.
Oh, yes, I did. Mind you, it wasn't just the understudy she wanted me to give up. She wanted me out of the theatre altogether. I went to see Mr. Poole, but he wouldn't hear of it.
And when it came to the second dress rehearsal, was she any better then?
To be honest, she was worse than ever. She just looked so desperately miserable all the time. But Mr. Bennington was doing his best to convince himself that she was fine. I overheard him talking to Jacko about it in the passage that leads from the stage to the dressing rooms.
The kid was all right, didn't you think so, Jacko?
1 minute to curtain call, please.
Sure, I must go then.
Wait a bit. If the fools would only leave her alone, she'd be perfectly all right. I can tell you one thing. If our celebrated author makes any of his nasty quips about her tonight, I shall take a hand. I've still got a trick or two up my sleeve.
What did he mean by that, I wonder?
I've no idea. Dr. Rutherford was very quiet while Mr. Poole was giving his notes, but I thought he looked like a slumbering volcano. And he kept turning his eyes in my direction.
But he didn't say anything.
Not until I was about to go home. And then he suddenly exploded.
I don't want that wench to leave. I've got to talk to you, Adam.
Run along home, Miss Tarn. You must be very tired.
Oh, no, you don't. I want the wench to stay, Adam.
I didn't stop to hear any more. I just fled as if my life depended on it.
And the following morning? This morning, I should say.
Nothing. If Dr. Rutherford was trying to persuade Mr. Poole to give Miss Gainsford the push, he obviously didn't succeed.
And how was she?
Oh, she looked scared stiff when she came in. Mr. Darcy brought her in a taxi.
I'm so frightened of him, J.G.
I won't have it. By God, if he worries you again, author or no author...
Not him. I know he's simply filthy to work with, but it's not him, really.
Then who is it?
It's Uncle Ben. Oh. I'm just plain terrified of him. I don't know what to do.
So what finally tipped her over the edge?
Macbeth, I think.
Macbeth?
Jacko was in her dressing room, putting the finishing touches to her makeup. She was pretty hysterical already from what he told me.
There's a jinx on this place, Jacko. Something that drove that man to murder. In the very dressing room where Uncle Ben is now. And it's out to get me tonight. What am I going to do?
You are going to go on and play your part and stop all this nonsense. It is the eye of childhood that fears a pendant devil.
What did you say? That's from Macbeth. You quoted Macbeth in my dressing room.
She just went berserk, threw a bottle of wet white at the mirror and screamed the place down. After that, there was nothing for it but for me to go on in her place, and Miss Hamilton had to do without me as a dresser. I can't remember anything else. I was in a kind of daze. Apart from actually going on, I didn't notice anything until Mr. Bennington came up and spoke to me after he came off stage.
I just wanted to say, I suppose you aren't to be blamed. You saw your chance and took it.
No.
But I'm not worrying about that. I just wanted to tell you that you needn't suppose what I'm going to do. You needn't think. I mean...
And I think that was just about the last thing he said to anyone.
Thank you, Miss Tarn. I think I now have a pretty clear overall picture of the tensions that were going round the theatre, apart from those normally associated with the first night. What I need to establish now is what everyone was doing between Bennington's final exit and the time of his death. If you would go and join the others, I think the best plan would be to get the whole company on stage.
Yes, sir.
I was on stage for the entire time, Mr. Allen. There's a scene before Ben's exit between Mr. Darcy, Parry Percival, Ben, and myself. Then Darcy and Parry go off, and Ben follows them a moment later, and Adam and I finish the play.
And were you on stage too for the whole period, Mr. Poole?
I go off for a moment after Ben's exit. It's a rather macabre coincidence that in the play Ben's character commits suicide off stage. He shoots himself. When I hear the shot, I go off and return almost immediately for the last scene with Ella.
Did anyone notice Mr. Poole while he was standing there?
Well, the doors recessed. I was more or less screened.
Darcy and I went straight back to our dressing rooms.
Together?
You were slightly ahead of me, I think, Parry.
Yes, I was. Miss Tarn was in the passage and I spoke to her for a moment.
Do you remember that, Miss Tarn?
Yes. Mr. Percival stopped and spoke to me. So did Mr. Darcy.
And they went on down the passage to be followed by yourself and Mr. Bennington. And that was when Mr. Bennington spoke to you.
Yes, that's right.
And then Mr. Dore joined you?
Yes. He said my makeup needed fixing.
So that after Mr. Bennington had gone to his room, you, Mr. Percival, were in your dressing room, which is next door to his. Mr. Darcy was in the dressing room, which is on the far side of Mr. Percival's. And Miss Tarn was in her own dressing room?
Actually, it's my dressing room, Inspector.
In Miss Gainsford's dressing room. How long were you all there?
I briefly adjusted this infant's makeup and returned with her to the stage.
I think that Mr. Percival and Mr. Darcy left their dressing rooms and went back to the stage for the curtain call before we did. I heard them going up the passage together.
And where were you, Dr. Rutherford?
Confined to my box, suffering the torments of the damned at what they were doing to my play.
And you, Miss Gainsford?
I was in the green room all the time. Have you got a cigarette, J.G.? I must have left mine somewhere.
Oh, yes, of course, dear.
You're quite certain that you didn't leave the green room at any time?
I don't know. I don't remember.
My dear Gay, I don't suppose the inspector imagines that you went into Ben's room, knocked him senseless with a straight left to the jaw and turned the gas on.
It would be interesting, Mr. Poole, to hear how you know about the straight left to the jaw.
I merely guessed. If Ben was killed, and I still don't believe that he was, it seems the only way in which the murder could be brought about.
And what about you, Mr. Darcy?
What?
Do you share Mr. Poole's views on the straight left theory?
Oh, I believe with the others that Ben's death was suicide.
And we still don't know whether Miss Gainsford left the green room.
Oh, for goodness sake! This is too tiresome. You looked in at the green room door when we were going up for the curtain call, didn't you, J.G.?
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, silly of me to forget. Gay was sound asleep in the armchair, yes.
And do you have any idea when you dropped off, Miss Gainsford? Was it before the beginning of the last act?
No, because J.G. came in to see how I was in the second interval. Didn't you, darling?
Yes, my dear.
Did anyone besides Mr. Darcy go into the green room during the second interval?
No.
But, my dear chap, surely you're wrong there. Ben went into the green room during the second interval.
Did he? Ah, yes. Perhaps he did. It quite slipped my mind.
Why on earth are you being so mysterious about it, J.G.?
Well, perhaps the reason is in your left trouser pocket, Mr. Darcy.
May I speak to you privately, Inspector?
Of course, Mr. Darcy. We can go into Mr. Poole's office. The rest of you can relax for a few minutes.
I did my best to cover up the grazes on my knuckles with grease paint, but obviously I didn't succeed. I suppose I behave very stupidly, but it has nothing to do with Ben's death.
I think you'd better tell me exactly what happened.
I can give it to you in a sentence. I hit Ben on the jaw in the green room during the second interval. I didn't knock him out, but he was so astonished he took himself off.
What sort of condition was he in?
Oh, damned unpleasant. Ugly drunk.
He behaved atrociously throughout the first and second acts.
In what way?
Well, as only a clever actor with too much drink inside him can behave, playing for cheap laughs.
And was it because of his performance that you hit him?
No, it wasn't. It was because of Gay. He was damned offensive.
Well, you'll have to tell us about it, I'm afraid.
I was giving Gay a couple of aspirin. She was terribly upset. Well, she's a frail little thing, you know, all heart and sensitivity, and between them, Ben and Rutherford have brought her to the edge of breakdown. Well, Miss Tarn's arrival was the last straw, and in the end, she couldn't go on. And tonight, Gay heard everybody raving about the girl's performance in the second act, and as they came off, I'm fond of Gay, and she just fell into my arms, sobbing her heart out, and then Ben came in and...
Go on, Mr. Darcy.
Well, he went for her. He was crazy. I tried to shut him up, but he was quite off his head. And began saying the most filthy things about Helena.
About his wife?
Well, about her and Adam. He used the sort of words that Othello and Leontes use, if you remember your Shakespeare.
I remember.
Well, he was talking pretty wildly, but I think... Well, this afternoon, while they were at home, he had tried to rape her.
I see. And so you hit him?
Only when he started to say the same kind of filthy stuff about Gay and me.
Thank you, Mr. Darcy. I don't think I need bother you any more for the moment.
Can I take that poor child home?
I'm sorry. Not yet. Not just yet.
It might account for Bennington doing himself in.
Being hit on the jaw?
Well, not exactly, but it might have sobered him up a bit. All that business with Helena Hamilton... I imagine they stopped living as husband and wife some time ago.
Self-disgust, you mean? Yes, it's quite possible, but there's one fact I can't get over.
And what's that, sir?
If a man's going to commit suicide, he doesn't carefully and heavily powder his unbecoming makeup as if he meant to go on and take his curtain call with the rest of the cast. Now, does he? Come in.
I'm sorry to trouble you, Inspector, but I've remembered something. It's probably nothing, but...
Come in, Miss Tarn. So... What's it all about?
It was on that first morning when Miss Hamilton sent me round to Mr. Bennington to ask for her cigarette case. When he was going through the pockets of his jacket, an envelope dropped to the floor.
Oh, we mustn't lose that one, must we? There's someone who'd give a hell of a lot for that. One hell of a lot. Take a look at it.
And did you see what it said?
Yes, I did. It was addressed to Mr. Bennington and had a foreign stamp on it. The name of the sender was written on the back.
Do you remember it?
It was Otto Brod, and the address was a theatre in Prague. At least I think so.
And what was in the envelope?
Nothing very much. A single sheet of paper, I should think.
Well, thank you very much, Miss Tarn. I think you may have given us something very important.
Do I still have to stay?
I'm afraid so, along with everybody else.
Of course.
We shall be calling in some of the others shortly.
Do you really think it's important, sir?
Hard to tell, Br'er Fox, but it does put things in a rather different light. I think we might try dropping the name Otto Brod into the conversation and seeing what kind of a reaction we get. Why don't we have a word with Helena Hamilton for a start?
Otto Brod? Yes. He's a Czech or an Austrian, a bit of an intellectual. We met him 3 years ago when we were doing a continental tour. He had written a play, and he asked my husband to read it. It was in German, and Ben's German wasn't really up to it. The idea was that Ben should get someone over here to take a look at it. But he was dreadfully bad at keeping those sorts of promises, and I don't think he ever did anything.
Have they kept in touch, do you know?
Oddly enough, Ben said a few days ago that he'd heard from Otto. If you want to see the letter, it'll be in his jacket. He was rather odd about it.
In what way?
He held the letter out to me and said, "That's my trump card."
Did you get the impression that he meant that it was a trump card he could use against anybody in particular?
Yes, I did. It seemed to me that it was myself he meant, or Adam, or both of us. But we've both got alibis, haven't we, if it was murder?
Well, you have, certainly. You didn't come down to the theatre this evening with your husband?
No. He was ready before I was. And in any case...
Well, I think I must tell you that I know something of what happened at your home this afternoon.
But how can you possibly know that?
Well, your husband didn't exactly keep it a secret.
It was a kind of revenge, I suppose.
I was in my bedroom trying to relax before opening night.
Hello, Ella. How comfy you look.
What is it, Ben? I'm resting.
I thought you might be interested to know. There'll be no more nonsense from Rutherford about Gay.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yes, I got him to see reason. And another thing. Do you both imagine I can't see through this dresser-come-understudy racket? When was it? On the New Zealand tour of 1930?
Ben, this is nonsense.
Is it? You've cast me for the part of the cuckold in your restoration comedy. Well, just for once, I'm going to play the lover.
It was degrading. Disgusting. That's why I'm certain that Ben killed himself. It was a final act of despair. He'd got nothing to live for. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Otto Broad? I think he was very fond of Ella for a time. An affair as brief as summer lightning floated out of some midsummer notion of Vienna and Strauss waltzes. Why bring him into it?
When Bennington came into the theatre this evening, he had a letter from Otto Broad in his pocket.
Why shouldn't he?
The letter is nowhere to be found.
Oh, my dear chap, he probably chucked it out or burnt it or something.
I hardly think so. He told Miss Hamilton it was his trump card.
Now, what did he mean by that, I wonder?
Does anybody else in the company have any acquaintance with Otto Broad?
I should hardly think so. It was too long ago. No, wait a minute. I think Jacko may know something about him. Why didn't you ask him?
I have heard of him.
Did you know him?
I've never met him. Never.
Perhaps you've seen some of his work. Would I be right, Monsieur Doré, in supposing that you speak German?
Yes, you would.
Well, then I think you may be in a position to tell me why Bennington regarded a letter that he had just received from Otto Broad as his trump card.
You have been very clever, Inspector. Huh. Very clever.
I think you'd better tell me all that you know, Mr. Doré.
They're all on stage, sir, as ordered.
Do you think I'm taking a rather risky line?
Well, sir, it's a very unusual sort of procedure.
It's a very unusual case. Come on, old trooper, let's get it over with.
Right you are, Chief.
I have to tell you all that there is no doubt that your fellow player was murdered. There is conclusive evidence to prove this, which I'm going to put before you. One of the last acts of the deceased was to powder his face, and yet after his death, there was no used pad of cotton wool anywhere in the dressing room. There is, on the other hand, a fresh stain near the gas fire, which may, on analysis, turn out to show that such a pad had been burned on the hearth.
Well, this is hardly very conclusive.
What is conclusive, Mr. Darcy, is that there was a box of face powder overturned after Bennington's death. It was over the coat which had been used to cover his head, and it was over his fingerprints on top of the gas fire. Now, the powder could only have been scattered after, and not before, Bennington's death.
So where exactly is all this leading, Inspector?
It is leading to a question, Mr. Percival. How is it possible to get Bennington down on the floor, disengage the tube from the gas fire, put the rubber end in his mouth, turn on the gas, and cover him with his own overcoat?
He was probably dead drunk.
Well, he was not too drunk to make up his own face. It seems more likely that he was drugged. How the drug was administered, I cannot say with certainty. It may have been in the brandy, but we shall, of course, be having a chemical analysis made of everything he used. His cigarettes, his makeup, and even the grease paint on his face.
Death by grease paint. How richly Jacobean.
Well, following this line of thought, it seems clear that two visits would have had to have been made to Bennington's dressing room. The first, to plant the drug during his scene on stage with Miss Hamilton in the last act. And the second, after he had come off, and before the smell of gas was noticed by Mr. Percival.
But why should any of us want to kill him?
Well, you all, I think, had a reason to dislike this man.
Yes, but there's a world of difference between...
In one of you, the cause was linked to that particular kink which distinguishes murderers from the rest of mankind. And with such beings, there's usually some explosive agency which, if it's touched off, sets them going as murder machines. In this case, I believe the fuse to have been a letter written by Otto Brod to Mr. Bennington. The letter has disappeared and was probably burnt in his dressing room, as the powder pad may have been burnt, by his murderer.
But what can Otto possibly have had to do with anything?
As for opportunity, if there were two visits to Bennington's dressing room during the last act, I think that all of you, except Miss Hamilton, could have made the first one. But for the second, we have a more restricted field. I think we can probably put Miss Tarn out of the picture.
That must be quite a change for you, darling.
As for Miss Gainsford, she was in the green room throughout the whole period and tells us that she was asleep. There is no witness to this.
Oh, George!
It's all right, my dear. We know it couldn't have been you.
Mr. Darcy and Mr. Percival are also on the list of persons without alibis during the crucial second period they were alone in their dressing rooms. Dr. Rutherford could certainly have visited Bennington's room during this period, as at any time during the performance, by coming down from his box and crossing the stage behind the scenery. Mr. Poole could not, in my opinion, have effected what had to be done during his very brief period off stage.
Thank you, Inspector.
Mr. Doré is in a somewhat different category. After he had escorted Miss Tarn back to the wings, everyone's attention was riveted on the stage, and he could have been almost anywhere.
As befits my role as Jacques of all trades.
Now, that is all I have to say. I'm going to ask you all to return to your dressing rooms and collect your things. I would also be obliged if you would call in on your way out and leave me a note of your addresses and telephone numbers. That will be all. If any of you wish to have a word, I shall be in Mr. Poole's office.
So, Mr. Parry Percival has checked out and gone home, and Mr. Darcy and his little friend, Miss Gainsford, and Miss Tarn has gone off to dream of stardom, and Miss Hamilton has gone home in a taxi. So what do you reckon now, Mr. Allen? A confession? An attempt to escape?
Oh, there'll be no escape. The place is surrounded. Well, if I've bungled it, at least I've done it in a big way. Come in.
Inspector, if there is to be an arrest involving a member of my company, I'd rather be present.
Of course, Mr. Poole, I fully understand, but I think that perhaps you'd...
Inspector, I think you'd better come at once. It's Dr. Rutherford. He's still sitting where he was, on the stage, in the dark. He says he wants to talk to you. I've an idea he's taken something.
Get an ambulance here, Brer Fox. Quick as you can.
Yes, sir.
Don't waste your time, Inspector. No, you're sending for ambulances and doctors. If I've calculated correctly, I've just left myself time to confirm what I suspect that Inspector Allen has already found out for himself.
It was Otto Brod's play that the audience applauded tonight, wasn't it?
Not such a bad little effort in its way. But I improved it beyond all recognition. It would have been nothing without me.
But Ben did recognize it.
Otto Brod gave him the play for his opinion. But old Ben's German wasn't up to much, and so Jacko and I had a read of it.
But Ben understood enough German to realize that your new play was the one that Otto Brod had given him.
Yes. Jacko recognized it too, of course. But he had the decency to keep his mouth shut. Ben wasn't so charitable and wrote off to Otto Brod to get his suspicions confirmed.
And I suppose Ben attempted a little blackmail?
He said that if I didn't stop insisting that the wretched Gainsford wench be sacked, he would publish Brod's letter. I had no alternative but to give way. But when the stupid girl had her breakdown after Jacko quoted from the Scottish play, Miss Tarn went on anyway.
And so Ben decided to go ahead, despite it all?
5 minutes before the performance began, Ben informed me that at the final curtain he intended to advance to the footlights and tell the audience I'd pinched the play. Knowing that Ben meant business, I slipped into his dressing room and loaded his powder pad with a handy little poison called Bethadine. And he got about 2 grams of it on his sweaty upper lip when he powdered himself after his exit.
Yes, I suspected something of the sort the moment I realized the pad was missing.
Bethadine works very fast, as I can confirm from present experience. I've taken a considerable dose of it myself. When I returned before the curtain call, Ben was already comatose. And I doubt whether the gas would have been necessary. But I went ahead with it anyway.
Because of the other death by gas poisoning, and to suggest suicide.
It might have worked, with a shade more attention to detail on my part. But I was always a little slapdash.
The ambulance has arrived, Inspector.
Let it alone. I'm already on the edge of the viewless winds. I knew it would come too late.
Opening night and last night on the same evening.
It may have given Rutherford a certain grim satisfaction.
Oh, poor old Rutherford. It all seems such a tremendous waste. And all for a little harmless plagiarism, which he couldn't bear to see exposed.
Well, you'll be looking for a new play, I suppose.
And a new theatre, I shouldn't wonder. Tonight has thoroughly confirmed the jinx on this place.
Well, at least you've one consolation, Mr. Poole.
I can't see any, Inspector.
Well, you've discovered a long-lost relative. And when you're looking for a bright young actress to play your next juvenile lead, at least you won't have far to go.
In Opening Night by Nio Marsh, Chief Detective Inspector Allen was played by Jeremy Clyde. Detective Inspector Fox, Tim Treloar. Martin Tarn, Beth Chalmers. Dr. Rutherford, John Hartley, Adam Poole, Michael Cochran, Helena Hamilton, Elizabeth Bell, Clark Bennington, Gavin Muir, Jacko Doré, Ioan Meredith, Gay Gainsford, Gemma Saunders, J.G. Darcy, Paul Gregory, Paddy Percival, Tom George, Clem Smith, Christopher Kellum. Opening Night was dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.